Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 862. This episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. Loot Crate is quality gear. Things that you might want to collect, but quite frankly, you just don't have time in your life to go out and try to find these things in the world. Not even with the internet. And besides, how do you know exactly what you want? Well, this just takes all the guesswork out. Loot Crate offers you an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. It doesn't matter if it's for you or for someone else. Do it for both. Give yourself a present. Give someone else a present. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, X-Files, Marvel's Jessica Jones. And then one lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate, including signed copies of Jessica Jones Alias Volumes 1 through 4. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe to receive that month's crate. When the cutoff happens, it's over. Head to lootcrate.com/Nerdist and use the offer code Nerdist to save 10% off any new subscription today. Katie Levine, what's on the corkboard?
One of our listeners, Jared Bierman, wrote in that he started the podcast a little late. Currently, he's on episode 363, but he's also an amateur toy photographer. And he does a lot of cool photography that I think our listeners would like. You can find him on Instagram at Bierman Photography. And that's Bierman spelled like Bierman.
Okay.
So cool last name. And then a few great environmental groups in the Los Angeles area, like the Laurel Canyon Association, Mountains Recreation, Conservation Authority, Citizens for Los Angeles Wildlife, and the Laurel Canyon Land Trust are trying to buy a mountain. They want to buy 17 acres of nearly pristine hillside in historic Laurel Canyon, and this will be maintained as open space, meaning no one can build on it, and it'll just be home to animals and nature. They're looking for donations since buying a mountain is expensive. So,
How expensive is it to buy a mountain?
I think it was like $1.7 million. Okay. I forget, but if you can find out more info and you can donate by going to letsbuyamountain.com.
That's very easy to remember.
Yeah.
That's a good domain.
Right?
Letsbuyamountain.com. That's delightful. Oh, I have another thing for the corkboard, Katie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to plug one of my own things, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I just needed your permission. I just want to make sure it was cool. The new show I'm doing on AMC, Talking with Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
Where someone might go, why would you do a Talking Dead show that's not about Walking Dead? Well, it's a fair question, but it's not. That's it. It's not about Walking Dead. So they came to me and said, you know, what would you want to do on the Sunday nights when Walking Dead is not on? And I said, well, I would like to do a show that looks like Talking Dead, but is really spiritually the podcast and maybe a Comic-Con panel. So that's what we're doing. And the first episode is Sunday, April 9th at 11 p.m. Elijah Wood is my first guest. There's only one guest per show or one, you know, like a panel per show. The second episode is some of the cast of Silicon Valley. James Corden, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Connie Britton, Bryan Cranston, Michelle Monaghan are some of the guests this season. Charlie Hunnam. So first of all, come be in the audience. If you go to One Iota, you can get tickets to that or just watch it when it airs. And we are also going to be putting out later in the week after it airs, and the unedited audio. So the TV version is edited down to whatever it is, 41 minutes or something. And then, you know, I said, hey, let's put out as a Nerdist podcast the unedited audio.
Yeah.
So you'll get to experience it either way. So that's on AMC. Please watch it. It would be really nice if you watch it. I'm excited. There's not really a long-form fun chat show like this, particularly about the kind of genre space that we live in. So too many short attention spans on TV these days. Too much. And our next guest. And this next guest. And this other game. And this other thing. So I wanted to. This is for people who, you know, don't have to have short attention spans for everything. So I hope you enjoy it. It's been really fun to make. This episode is Allison Williams, who I've been pals with for the past couple years. And we've always talked about whenever you're out here, we were never able to work the scheduling out, but it just so happens that Allison Williams is in one of the greatest horror movies
of
all time. Get Out, written and directed by Jordan Peele, if you haven't seen yet, the numbers would seem to indicate that you have already seen this movie, but if you haven't seen it, you absolutely should. It is a stunning film, and he has literally invented a genre, and Allison is fantastic in it. She's also on the final season of Girls, Sunday nights, 10 p.m. HBO and HBO Go /HBO Now.
Yeah, you can catch up on all of it.
Depending on how you get your HBO, you have a variety of HBO choices. But they are all HBO programming, so check it out. But Allison Williams is the absolute best, so I'm glad we were finally able to sit down with her and have a chat. And Matt Myra sat in on this one.
He went
on hiatus from the Goldbergs, sat in on a couple podcasts, and this was one of them. It was delightful to have him back.
Treat.
That Jonah Ray, we got to work on that Jonah Ray. Jonah Ray is the other one who's just doing a million things at the moment, but we are proud of him. This episode also brought to you by Blue Apron. Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a difference. It is important for you to know where your food comes from. So for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron will deliver delicious quality food courtesy of over 150 local farms, fisheries, ranchers across the United States right to your door, supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients. And with Blue Apron's freshness guarantee, you can be sure that every ingredient in your delivery will arrive ready to cook, or they will make it right. Blue Apron is great. My family uses it. My mom loves it. I got it for my mom. She is in love with Blue Apron. It's the kind of thing where she'll text me pictures of it or call me and go, here's what I made last night. So it must be good, because my mom is an amazing cook, by the way. She's an Italian lady and she knows food and she loves Blue Apron. Some of the meals include spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, ricotta salad, sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot and ginger fried rice. So it's a wide berth of foods. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with shipping by going to blueapron.com/nerdist. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now here's the Nerdist Podcast number 862 with Allison Williams.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
How are you?
Just a bunch of married people in a room.
I know. I brought you a present. This is a strawberry Kit Kat from
Japan. Thank you for not making it green tea. I was terrified you were going to give me the green tea one you gave Lena.
Do you not?
And I was like, oh God, we're going to have to start with my childlike eating habits.
Do you like green tea? I think it is
dirt.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But also, I just more recently had matcha, which is actual dirt. And I just think all of Los Angeles needs a food intervention. And I've been trying to conduct one on Lena for a long time.
It's really time. And this is why you're here.
Thank you so much. I feel like this is why I'm here.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming. I know your mission has been to save Los Angeles from itself.
Yes, exactly. And to make food what it has always been. And on that note, I'd like to remind everyone, even at the beginning, to enjoy your fucking burritos.
Yes. Yeah, let's see if people are going to
start enjoying them now.
Did it just end? Did the podcast just end?
No, you didn't say it. You always say it.
If I say it, then that's how it ends.
Right.
Okay, but sometimes
he lets Patrick Stewart say it.
Enjoy your burrito.
I didn't think that was going to be the case for me because I'm not exactly Patrick Stewart-like. I mean, I get the comparison frequently,
but
I figured I'd just say it now.
I mean, I think Allison Williams as Jean-Luc Picard in the...
Listen, you know I'm not scared to play a dude. I've done that. I am down. I can't tell you how frequently I read scripts and ask if I can play the male parts in it.
And does anyone ever say sure?
No, you would know about it. No, of course no one says yes. All the time, the male parts are written so much better. They're so much more interesting and complicated.
You should ask them to flip the gender.
That's what I try to do. Yeah. I say, can this be a novel idea? Can this doctor be a woman? And they're like, well...
And do they ever even ask, or do they just say, or is it?
I mean, it just dies. It's dead on arrival. There's no way.
That riddle, I can't operate on.
Exactly.
He's
my son. The doctor's a woman.
What? They flipped the script.
It's an ice cube. Those were the best.
Ice knife.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
That's ridiculous. I feel like that's you know, you should just keep a mental log of every time you've done that, and then one of these times
honestly,
it's going to work.
Lost count. It will work eventually. But a lot of the best opportunities for that are in like bigger comedies where there's one scene in a doctor's office about like some dick rash or something. Inevitably, it's always a dick related injury. Someone has sustained a dick injury.
His laughter is exactly why.
Yeah, exactly. You are the most basic male audience, it turns out.
I'm sorry. I'm not. This is it.
You are.
It was just the casual. It was just the. It was the casual tossing away of dick rash.
Well, yeah,
which is why she would make a great doctor.
Exactly,
would make a great doctor
because it doesn't shake me at all. I mean, don't have a dick. I've never had a dick rash, so there's that too. But I'll break some news here I don't have. But I always ask if that part can be a feat because it doesn't matter. It's one scene. It shouldn't matter. Period. But also the fact that you can only picture the scene being funny enough. If a dude is playing, it's so stupid. But everyone always says no.
I feel like if there's ever a scene where a doctor just needs to say one jokey line, it goes to Tom Lennon. I feel like Tom Lennon is always... 100%.
And honestly, I'm comfortable with that. And if they're saying, like, we're looking for more of a Tom Lennon, I'm like, never mind. Forget I said it. This should, of course, be played by Tom Lennon.
My point is that Tom has had his time. And it's,
I disagree. I think we're just seeing the beginning of Tom's capabilities as a very zany doctor.
You know, he's the same in Memento and The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Returns or Rises, whatever the fuck it is.
I'm not going to be.
Character?
I'll just establish this now.
He's the same character.
I'm not going to be able to answer any of those questions.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'm okay, here to answer those for you.
Tom's busy with it. Tom's in a Smiths cover band. He doesn't have time.
He is.
He plays guitar in a Smiths cover band.
Should we make this whole episode about him? Or
that's
just
what I was hoping that you were going to do is talk about the food thing, and then we were going to talk about Tom for a while.
Now he texts him. He lives close.
No. His reign is over.
He could come by.
His reign is over.
It's just awkward if we're in the same space. We compete so many roles together. It's too weird.
What if she pulls off
it's us and Patrick Stewart.
You and Patrick Stewart
are always
in
audition waiting rooms together.
You were this close to Professor X. This close in the X-Men franchise.
This close. But
I feel like Allison Williams in a big superhero franchise is long overdue.
Well, is it? Mom? I don't know. I think I only just did my first movie and thus kind of earned any kind of conversation about a presence in it.
God, that movie was so good.
Oh, thank you.
You were
so
real
much.
Good in that movie.
The movie I was in was called Get Out.
Oh, it was so good.
She flipped the genders in that script. She was
yeah, I was supposed to play Chris.
Nope.
Yeah, we just flipped
Jordan
it out. And Jordan was like, oh no, this makes so much more sense.
This way.
This
okay,
really
great.
Why would
good
yes.
change,
I don't know why I didn't think of that to begin with. But thank you very much for your insight.
I gave him that note.
Yes, you are so fantastic. Just that character.
Thank you.
I was...
What you're hearing is the desire to not spoil anything.
I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything.
It's been a while. And when will this come out?
Katie Levine.
April 4th,
a couple weeks.
I don't know. I'm going
to
let you decide.
I still think it's better to not, even though the movie
you
is
have a
one
lot
of the
experience.
Highest grossing films of 2017.
Well, Beauty and the Beast came in and fucking destroyed. Beauty and the Beast in one weekend
you
made more
Beauty
than
the
Get
Beast
Out.
Has, you know what? Beauty and the Beast has a dick rash, all right?
Beauty and the Beast is a treasure. It is a treasure.
We already saw it once. We already saw it once.
In my presence.
We saw it in animated form.
As close as I get to spirituality. no, I mean, it's so exciting. Jordan, the very exciting statistic is Jordan is the first black director to cross the 100 million threshold with his debut movie.
And he did it very quickly.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
And with something that we're all insanely proud of. And I remember after Sundance, because we did like a secret screening, and then a bunch of reviews came out about it because they very wisely invited reviewers to come see it. And I was like, not only... are people liking it, but they're getting it. Like, mm-hmm. they're getting all the shit we layered into it, and they only saw it once, which made me feel super dumb because I had to read it, like, 5 times before I saw everything. And a lot of my friends have gone back to see it a second time.
Reading is different than seeing it, though.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
That is true.
I mean, you're just reading it off a page. True. You don't see how things
no,
are
and you
framed.
Can't, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of it isn't can't possibly be scripted, and it lived in Jordan's mind, which is why it's so twisted and fantastic. And I loved your conversation with him talking about it because he's just such an authority.
Yeah.
As you observed, this is his most passionate genre.
But also it's also the that sort of subset genre that he has created of the social thriller.
I know, which I love.
Which
and
is
he
great.
Told me that this was before we did the movie, so maybe I'm just like dead to him now, but he told me I was his Uma.
What?
Which means I hope I'm in the rest of those
All right, we're going to get shots of your feet.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay.
By the way, I get alerts on Instagram. Apparently, they are well documented, well disseminated. So eat your
Gross.
Heart out.
Eat your feet
that is
out.
One, that is one. And I remember my dad emailing me the first time a foot headline Google alert came into his phone before he turned off said Google alert at some point. He was like, why? Wow, interesting. He had my name as a Google alert.
Name. Gotcha.
And then he saw some headline about my feet or something. And he was like, but why?
How do you explain that?
Can you filter out fetish-related articles about your daughter?
Do you explain that to your dad?
You can't really totally explain it. And I'm not shaming it. I just genuinely wish someone could kind of sit me down and do their best to walk me through it. I don't understand the foot thing, but that's because I have the opposite thing about feet. I'm like, I don't need
Oh, I thought you meant you had a hand fetish.
No.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
As someone
Is
explained
the opposite
the feet
of a
people
foot
to me,
a
I feel
hand?
Like that's they're kindred spirits. That's not an opposite.
Yeah,
you don't think so?
Feet and hands used to be the same thing very recently.
Yeah.
And by very recently, I mean just like a cool
like a couple hundred years ago.
Million years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh, 100
not 100
right,
years ago.
Right. I'm
does
sorry.
Does he know anything
I don't
about
think
history?
He does. He thinks the earth is flat
100
like 100
years ago, Keds was invented.
If the earth wasn't flat, how come I can see what's across
Guys,
the street?
Guys, Shaq told me the earth is flat, and now everything I thought was true isn't Katie, a rare Katie.
Guys, I'm questioned. Fucking magnets. How do they work? How do they work?
No God. Idea.
If you get Katie to laugh, that's a really big deal.
I know, and I just did You Made It Weird, and the fact that she didn't sleep during that, because it was like 3+ hours or something.
No, whatever it was, you saved Pete. That's
no.
all it is. So don't worry about it yet.
But yes, I love Katie. I love Scout. I'm into the whole thing.
I am so excited to hear that. That makes me very happy because I met you a few years ago at the Emmys, and you were really nice to me. And
of course, it was nice. Well, I'm a fan of yours.
Well, that seems very weird to me. And so I'm flattered, and also it just blew me away because I don't know, when you do the podcast, you just don't assume that people you just go. Oh, we just make this thing, and I guess sometimes people listen to it. I don't know. But, you know, when you run into people and go, hey, I know who you are. And you go, hey, I know who you are, too. You're like,
yeah, well,
what?
That's very weird. Well, also the fact that we have a completely lopsided sense of how close we are right now. Like,
right.
As the four of us are sitting here. Actually, I'll include Katie.
Yeah.
My sense of how well I know all of you is stalkerish. Because I just know so much about you guys. Like, you know, enough to congratulate your marriages. I know about all of the vicissitudes of your work life, the evolution.
She did ask me how the Goldbergs was going.
Yeah, I mean.
I was like, well.
I did.
It just wrapped.
I was like, you guys must have just wrapped. Like,
about the IVF. Did you get some IVF stories?
I mean, listen. You can download the entire podcast.
Yeah,
Matt
and
Dory's Excellent Adventure. Also, pre-order Startup, a novel on Amazon. Thanks.
I know. I just heard all about Startup. I'm very excited. But anyway, that has to be the weirdest thing for you. Because in reality, we don't actually know each other that well. We email occasionally.
Yeah.
But I know you very well, or at least I think I do. I know the public version of you. You speak into a microphone.
And so this is why you need to start a podcast.
Oh, it's
so
definitely not what I need to
do. No,
yeah.
You don't think it's time?
No one needs more of this in the world, I don't think. I'm going to mete it out very slowly so that no one resents
it. If everyone thought that, there wouldn't be any podcasts.
No, I know. I just think like my particular brand of person can easily, I'm on the verge of annoying at all times. And I have to
police. You've just described all podcasters.
You've just described podcasters. Yes, Matt's correct.
No, but I don't know. It's very different. I'm like, I'm the kind of girl that is so easily grating. Like if I sing in One More Thing too soon, it'll piss people off. Or like if I play
that's
someone.
Just in your head though.
If I play someone with a character description of like, she's got it all together, but she can't find love. Like everyone's going to be like, I'm fucking done. I'm done. She tries so hard at everything she does and it's exhausting to watch.
She knows everybody else, but she doesn't know herself.
Yeah, I mean,
all
it's
right,
just middle school, so everything is just middle school.
Were you always are you a version of that person? Are you?
I am that exact person. Very little. Like I'm the person I was at 4 or 5, basically, and that's kind of how I stick to my shit. Is like I ask myself what she would want. She kind of runs the show.
The 4-year-old Allison Williams?
Yeah, she's the tiny alien in my head.
Gotcha.
And because she kind of knew everything before being corrupted by everything else and just loved the idea of being an actress too. So even on that level, I can kind of use her to keep it real.
Was the little Allison Williams kind of a Lisa Simpson?
She was, well, yes, she, in that she was precocious, definitely. Okay. Like she, I, this is too weird. I can't keep talking about her in the third person. It's, it is I.
I'd like to speak to little Allison
no,
for a moment,
no, we're
please.
Not doing that right now. I talked constantly even before I could form words. Like my parents would put me to bed and I'd just like be like, all right, good night. And then I'd be like, da, da, da. I'd be like, so da 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 da. And they'd watch the monitor and I'd just be like, not watch the monitor. They'd listen to it because there wasn't video monitors back then, but they'd listen to it and I'd just be chatting. And like if it were a horror movie, it'd be terrifying. You'd assume there was something that you couldn't see in the corner talking back. But in reality, it was just Blanket, Baby Dog Bear, and Big Dog Bear. And we were all just having a blast.
So you were not being haunted by...
No, I just I had a lot to say. I was very frustrated by this fact that no one could understand what I was saying during the day because I couldn't talk yet. And so I was just like, oh, God, I'll get it out at night, I guess, when no one's listening. No one can tell me to be quiet because they're on the phone or whatever. And then once I could form words, their sleep ended because I just was like... And one more thing.
You knocked it. Yes.
Yes. I was,
it was
Hamilton.
Like tiny Columbo.
Yeah, exactly. I was Hamilton as a 4-year-old.
One more thing.
Yes.
Excuse me. And
yeah,
another
exactly.
thing. So then where does that lead you? Were you on the debate team? Were you in speech?
I loved debating. I wasn't on the debate team because it was a conflict with I don't want to brag. And in fact, I literally don't want to brag about this. But in environmental science, when I was in middle school, we had debate and there were a bunch of topics and we had to become experts on them. And then at the last second, they told us if we were pro or con. And my topic was logging. And I ended up having to debate pro logging.
Okay.
And we won our debate, but also we won best debate team. Oh. And I won best debater.
Nice.
So that's a brag about like...
I mean, I can't wait early, to go logging.
Early double digits. I don't know how I formed my argument. I think at the time my uncle was a lobbyist for Mead West Vaco. So I think I was probably just like, just send me your duck. send me everything you say in government to make logging continue so you can form paper. So
and they just throw the word heretofore in every
exactly,
once in a while.
Exactly. And they were like, I mean, this is a very clear win. But I loved debating. But I did a lot of plays. I don't know. It is a pretty clear line. Like there's a little to-do list I made when I was a young girl that is so classic. It's just so so much has happened in my life since then, and yet it's so untarnished, any of it. Like it says things like do all of your homework best as can be, have a little snack, not too big though, practice piano for at least 1 hour,
wow.
Feed Lucy. Like it was this list of things to do once I got home from school every day. Lay out your outfit for the next day. Like it was, and I probably didn't do any of it, but it almost didn't matter because the person that made that list is also the same person that makes lists without executing them today.
Now, was this a 4-color pen? So one was
yes.
In, okay, good.
It was many color pens. Wait, thank you for knowing that.
Sure, yeah.
Almost certainly the smelly pens, which I'm sure are illegal now because they smelled too good and brought too much joy to children's brains.
And yes, exactly.
And probably also ruined their brains. And so that, I don't know, it's been a pretty kind of straight line, a few deviations, but other than that, it's been kind of like, that's what I come back to always is that person.
And do you feel like you've gone through any like major discovery or changes?
Well,
in that
I
time?
Should add that that's not like the most sympathetic character in a school situation. So bullying was a pretty constant presence.
It was constant
oh,
pressure.
100%. Yeah.
But also
totally.
But it had nothing to do with the fact that your dad was famous and
it
people,
definitely had to do yeah. with that. So it was a kind of it was tricky because I was bullied before the people around me understood what he did for a living, which helps me realize that it's not about him. It's
right.
not nepotistic bullying. I earned
right.
this.
Right.
It is something fundamental to me. That was
your,
again
yeah.
grading at all times, and
that was
like
more
I remember
of a secondary.
That
bullying.
Was secondary, guys.
Yeah.
I was first.
Yeah.
I am
yeah.
the
yeah.
first ingredient.
Yeah.
I remember in fourth grade there were some mean girls in my grade who did not remain. Once we all kind of like became who we were, we all started to get along because it was a small school. But they talked about me behind my back so frequently, and I was so good at knowing when people were talking about me behind my back that I kept walking in on conversations they were having about me that they had to invent a person named Allison that they had supposedly gone to summer camp with
Christ.
So they could continue. Matt, if I'm making you sad, that's
so,
really
yeah,
dark.
Yep.
Really,
you're making
that's
me
sad.
For
you?
The saddest
oh,
person
shit.
In podcasting. You're making
oh,
sad.
God. I've just heard you tell so many stories where at home, I'm like, oh, man, dude, stop.
This is a big deal that Matt's even here today. He hasn't been on the podcast
in
like a year.
I've got time off, guys.
I know. I'm
here,
here
to bother Chris constantly.
Oh, yay.
I'm delighted. I heard his voice outside, and I was like, what?
I know. He's not. He hasn't
so
been.
Exciting.
He just emailed me a couple, texted me a couple days ago and was, hey, can I come on Tuesday? And I said, sure, yeah.
I'm around.
First, I said, who is this?
Yeah, yeah, obviously, new phone, who it is.
And then I said,
we did a ghost
thing,
and then he went,
we
had a fun run.
We had a fun run with it. I was like, oh, the guy with the guitars, the left guy, the left-handed guy.
That's me.
Left-handed guy with a low sperm count. I know him.
Low sperm count. Lefty, good.
Yeah. Do you play guitar? I have a very low sperm count.
Like, maybe the lowest.
Super low.
Not because of the dick rash.
Nope,
you know what's funny? Is your sperm count and my sperm count are closer than Hardwick and I?
Yeah,
wait,
probably.
First of all, you don't know what my sperm count is.
I guarantee you it's more than a million.
Do you know yours yet?
I don't know.
Let's get it checked out.
I don't
know. Let's do it right
on
now.
The podcast. Let's do it.
I have a holistic doctor you can call who can just tell by looking at you.
My urologist is here. Howard Kim, come on in.
Oh, my God. Well, you go about the stirrups. This is great.
Stirrups.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're doing it wrong.
I don't know.
What doctor are you going to?
A horse doctor.
You're going to a gynecologist.
I'm going to a horse gynecologist.
So his sperm count and mine are equal. If he's been going to a gynecologist.
They're exactly equal.
Normal is like 80 million. What I'm saying is
no way.
So what I'm saying
million.
Is between 80 and 120 million, right?
So
the
Rock has like 160 million.
At least.
It's like a billion.
At least. So what I'm saying is,
I've been making a ton of the Rock jokes. I can't just call him Rock. Like, you have to say a ton of the Rock.
The Rock.
You
have to say the.
Do you ever refer to him by Dwayne The Rock Johnson or just The Rock?
No, I mean, I am so familiar with the idea of him that I can't refer to him in such a long.
Have you ever met The Rock?
No, sure, haven't. I think I'd burst into flames. I'm just confused as to how that happened. How he can exist and I can exist at the same time.
In the same universe.
In the same species. I would understand if we had deviated at some point.
Right.
And like there was like a The Rock version of humanity and my version of
there's
it.
Definitely
it's very confusing.
There's something very Galapagos, I think.
Yes,
exactly. Maybe you just formed on different islands.
I'm sure we did.
You know?
I'm sure we did. Or he's like it would be like a bald eagle looking at a sparrow being like, this is interesting.
How? What do I do with that?
I know.
How am I supposed to, what is this?
I know.
Or just like a tiny bird. We were watching Planet Earth 2. Which is fucking
amazing.
Delightful.
The deuce, nice.
Insane that it got better.
It did,
so weird.
It did get better.
The first time we were all like, this is it.
Yep.
This is
it's not going to get any better than this.
The pinnacle of nature photography.
Exactly.
But it's just those tiny little birds that ride on the back of ostriches because the ostriches displace insects. And so the tiny birds catch all the insects that the ostriches
parasitic.
Displace. He is the
symbiotic.
He is the ostrich, and we are the tiny birds riding.
That makes
on his
total
back.
Sense, and I would be honored to have that position, or to be the fish alongside the whale. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just glad to
the lampreys that attach to mm-hmm. the yes, absolutely. I feel like that all the time.
Yes, that's me with Lena, and that's me with Jordan.
That's not true. I feel
I'm
like
kidding.
Now I'm sure it's emotional that the show that you've been doing for a while is ending, but it's...
Yeah, I mean, if you call crying for, like, a cool several weeks emotional, then, yeah, I would also say that sounds healthy. It was insane. I was caught off guard by how emotional it is. Rabia is here, who I'm worried is going to burst into tears. Rabia has been with... She's with HBO, and she's been doing PR. She started with Girls, basically. You were, what, 33, 32? 31 when Girls started. And so we all like grew up together. We were just talking about this yesterday. And she just cries all the time whenever it comes up. So don't be alarmed.
We'll mic her.
It's very sweet. No, we all, the only reason it's so lopsided is that we all cried so much as it was ending. And then Rabia came in to help us promote it. And so as we were promoting it, she was experiencing the emotions that we experienced on set. And so it's been funny to kind of like watch it come out in her as we just have no tears. Like, I can't cry anymore about it. I just, it felt like, as Lena said on this podcast, and we've talked about a lot, it felt like a loss. It felt like a profound shift in something very fundamental in all of us that is kind of to be determined in its impact on us.
Well, it's just that period of time where you are now. You've grown another into another. You've grown. I don't want to say grown up because you're grown ups, but I mean.
No. I was 22 when it started, and I would not classify that as
it's like shedding a skin.
Well, it's just you do. There is an emotional arc that an evolution that happens in your 20s, and when you and this just coincides with you know, the emerging from that.
Yeah.
And so there is, it's interesting that you can be emotional about something that also might be a very positive change, which is now you're evolving and you in this movie and you will do no doubt more, but you're growing into the thing, into the person that you will be. And that's,
it's really, that is
fun.
Exciting. Definitely. The weird thing is, we've been talking a lot, the four of us, about wondering what happened to our actual 20s because it's unclear. We don't know. Like Marnie, Jessa, and Hannah had like very realized, messy 20s experiences. And we did that for them. We like put that into life for those characters. But the four of us have had the most steady, boring 30s, 20s, I can imagine. Like, I met Ricky, my husband, who you know,
yeah,
who loves both of you. I met him at 22, right after we'd shot the pilot. Then I got cast in the show, and then that began a cycle that went on for 7 years in my life, where it was like every summer we'd shoot Girls, and then every December, January, February, we'd promote it, and then we'd come back to it. Like, it was just this cycle I was on.
Right.
I meet Ricky. We move in together. We get a dog. We get married. Like, it's just my friend group stays pretty much the same, growing a few people every once in a while, shedding a few people every once in a while, like a normal 20s thing. But the joke with my friends was always like, yeah, take that job in that other city because I'm just going to be here in this cycle when you get back. I'll be with the same dude. I'll be in the same apartment. I'll have the same dog. I'll have the same job.
Same list.
I'll look the same. This is the most different I've ever looked, being blonde. Like, everything is just – I've been in stasis and things have changed. Like, it's exciting for, you know, to get married and everything like that. But for the most part, I haven't had that very – by all accounts, unpleasant, and by playing Marnie, it seems very unpleasant experience, but totally formative.
Sure.
Of kind of thrashing through your 20s. And the question we're all struggling with is, are we about to go through a major regression?
Well,
and like get and lose our marriages and have to go back?
No. I think, you know, I think it's the 20s are about, I think, pushing boundaries and trying. I mean, I think you should always push boundaries, but I mean, you're really, like you said, thrashing around. But I think maybe there was more thrashing than you realize was happening because most people are not on a hit television show in their 20s. And so, in lieu of that, are doing other things to try to, you know, experience whatever it is that there is to experience.
There really wasn't a lot. I'm not kidding. There was not a lot of that. The other thing is that, so Jemima already had a kid by the time we shot the pilot, then quickly had her second baby. We all were pretty much, I met Ricky very early, and then shortly thereafter, Lena met Jack, and then Evan, Zasha met. They're now married. So, like, there has been, like, we've never dated anyone in our cast. Like, there's never been that element at work on Girls.
That's good, though. That's fine.
Definitely good. Yeah. Whenever I watch other shows with young actors, it's a terrible stereotype I have, but I'm like, I wonder who's fucking. Like, I just caught up on How to Get Away with Murder, and because I just caught up, I'm behind on all the goss, and I so I don't know, like, who's dating or who's hooking up or whatever.
Who's with it, yeah.
But I'm desperate to know, because I just know, and I love picturing, like, those little dynamics after a scene where it's like they're being mean to each other, and then or someone who isn't in the scene is like just suspiciously hanging around because they have a crush on one of the actors after all these years. Like, I love thinking about that stuff.
Like, they fight in the scene and they just go
and then
rip each
like,
other's
I'm
clothes
so
off
sorry
in the trailer. Yeah.
After they wrap, like,
I'm so turned
sorry,
on right now.
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
I don't know. It's.
I mean, just using that show as an example, but like typically you would think a show about people in their 20s, like a bunch of virile sexual people, like we'd be having sex with each other, and that's just never. We've all just simulated it, but it's never happened in real life for any of us. So,
and so were those parts weird for you? I mean, I feel like that is so.
Have you done that? Have you done sex scenes? Never.
Not hosting shows. It's not common. When
listen,
you're hosting a show.
I don't know what you do.
We've done two
all the
on
time.
Talking Dead, but then other than that, it hasn't really happened on anything else.
I thought maybe someone would have asked you to do.
You have a podium. We don't know what's going on behind the podium.
You
Chris,
know, Josh McDermott and I had some dry humping on Talking Dead, but it wasn't like
okay.
It, you know, it was
classic Josh.
As long as it was consensual,
it was absolutely. It was absolutely. We both knew what we were getting into.
It's definitely weird, but I'm very happy that it's not something I'm nervous about. I didn't realize this, but a lot of actors kind of read through scripts and get to a sex scene and immediately are like, how do I get this cut? They tell their agent, like, I need to get this cut. I don't want to do this, whatever. But I read like over them. I often like don't even absorb them anymore because I'm just so used to it at this point. The only thing that will make me stop in my tracks is when I read the description of a sex scene and there's no dialogue about like inner turmoil or like comedic moments. And I'm like, wait, what? How do you have sex on film when you're not talking? Is that just porn? Like, is this supposed to look sexy?
Yeah.
Because that I don't know if I'll be able to do.
Right.
I haven't had like serious on camera sex maybe ever in my career.
But someone put his face in your butt on the show.
And no, so, it was, his face in my butt. That's right.
And so how does that... I mean,
I've never looked at it from his perspective. I had always described it as there was a face in my butt. how narrow-minded of me.
I just, you know.
No, it's a really interesting. You flipped it and it completely derailed me because I've literally never. I thought about his experience a lot leading up to it. And I like structured this entire thing that I wore around his comfort and mine.
Sure.
His and her comfort.
His and her comfort. For butt eating?
For a simulated
those on Facebook.
Butt play situation. I'm sure you can. You can set them. I was talking about this company that Ricky made that he just sold to BuzzFeed for his latest job at Facebook. Anyway, that's the explain behind that. Yeah. I'll tell you that after. But anyway, it was like it was pads, like giant menstrual pads. Like, please God, let me never need anything this thick. But I just wanted like padding so that he didn't feel like he was actually coming into contact with anything real.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I didn't have to worry about that.
Sure.
And everything was adhered and there were layers and layers and layers of the things. And all of it was invisible from the side. It was shot from the side. And so I didn't want him. I definitely felt worse for him.
Sure.
But the other thing is, it was not scripted, so I didn't know that the motorboating was coming. That was something he brought to it just all on his own. And it was – the first take was absolutely shocking. It was just – it was my first day back that season. It was the day before my birthday. It was so fun to like say hi to everybody. And then I think it was the last scene that we were shooting that day. And we had never – shot a scene that hot and heavy before, me and Eben, and so it was like Eben and I, that'll bother me. And
Katie, cut that out.
Yeah, no, please, Katie, keep the dick rash stuff in, but
dick rash
take
stuff,
that
but
out.
Let's have proper grammar,
please. Thank you.
Okay.
It was like, it was just unbelievably strange. That sensation was so weird. It was like, because I wasn't expecting it, which ostensibly you're not expecting everything that happens to you sexually anyway.
Right.
But that was, in the realm of things I could have expected, that was like a real outlier on that graph. And it was hysterical. And the first time we did it, I don't think I made it through the entire thing without laughing. I don't think there's no way I did. Because it was just like, half of it was shock. Like, this idea came from either muscle memory or just your imagination. And so processing
in
that
his
was
mind,
so
that's how
surprising.
You're supposed to do that. Like, that's what
I was
this
like,
is.
Oh my God, your life just became so much muscle more interesting.
It was just a window. Like, you just got a window.
Yeah.
Into, oh.
It's like when you watch actors shower on film, like, it has to be the way they shower. It must be. Or like wipe. Like, right. I've had to roll or get toilet paper together a lot of times on camera. And one time with Booth Jonathan, I had Marnie be a folder because I know some people are folders. And then I had her later do like a twirl bunch situation because
sure.
I wanted to like, you know, sure. She evolved. And I think it's – I put that much thought into it only because I have time. And but most of the time when you see someone like shampooing or showering, like that has to just be the way they shower as an actor.
Yeah.
Not the character.
I've never thought about that.
Well, have you ever – also
you
too –
it's amazing. I have not.
You know, I think it is because your muscle memory is just so powerful in that moment.
Well, you know how when people – if people go like, yeah, whatever –
oh, the jerking it.
Yeah.
They use the hand that they use?
That yeah, yeah.
Do you think?
I think.
Oh, I always double gun.
Their dominant hand.
You double gun?
I always throw it up, too.
Yeah, like just like, eh.
Well, where is it going to go?
Everyone gets some.
It's not the 4th of July where you shoot up a
hey,
bullet, it comes
Bastille
down.
Bastille Day.
Does anyone
right.
know
that's
what we're
land.
Talking about? Because these have only been physical.
We're making jerking off motions. I double fist it.
Double-handed
and
one.
then toss.
You ever do the, like, sound with it? Because that was a big thing in college.
No.
when boys only did derivative comedy. Boy, I don't know where that came from.
If it made that sound when it happened, you need to see a doctor.
Can you imagine?
That is not a good...
There'd be no humans.
Well, good news, Chris. My urologist, Howard Kim, is still here.
Oh, great.
Ladies and gentlemen.
He's brought the stirrups back and a horse this
time. From Cedars.
Horse gynecologist,
straight
Howard
from Cedars.
Kim.
Didn't stop, hit in and out. Straight from
now,
Cedars.
So when you have a scene like that and you, I assume your parents watch the show, do you say to them...
Oh, yeah, we talked about it beforehand.
You did?
Yeah. I was just reminded on a talk show that my mom helped me think of the pad aspect of that thing.
I got the sense that you have a very open relationship with your family and they're cool about stuff.
Yeah, we're allowed to hook up with other people. Jinx, Matt.
Yeah, we did it.
Same.
See you after podcast.
Yeah.
So you're doing it. You're doing
it. No, it's much more fun this way because then I leave and you guys have to come back.
We do. Oh, my God.
For 800 episodes.
We're prisoners.
What number is
it? I must be close to one of your milestones.
We're 860, I think. 859, 860, something like that. Yeah, we're
860. Oh, it is. It's moving slower because we're down to 1 a week.
Because we're down to 1 a week.
That's right.
Yeah. That was so I didn't die.
Well, that we appreciate that.
I appreciate that.
We're very, very close, and thus, like, nothing. We're not very skittish about things. Like, there was an episode a couple weeks ago where Marnie and Ray have sex actually in the same position that she had sex with Desi as a way to illustrate the difference between their sexual chemistry or lack thereof, and she's fully just going through the motions of having sex with someone, and because her face is facing away from him, we can see that she's totally faking everything that's happening.
Sure.
But after the scene, one thing I've never seen dramatized, and I'm sorry if – well, why apologize for getting too graphic now? That's stupid. Is that there's maintenance post-coital that I never see dealt with.
Ever.
I insisted on doing, and I asked the director if I could do this, I said, if I'm going to stay here and stand and have this conversation, can I please take off a thing of paper towel, bunch it up, and stick it in my crotch?
Yes.
And he was like, 100%, you weirdo.
That's not weird. That always bothers me. Like, you know,
it drives me crazy. I'm like, your sheets just, does someone just, like a nymph just come and whisk them away and wash them immediately
after
you
have a sheet
sex?
Nymph?
It's weird. We had to fire ours. There was sexual harassment.
Well, I have a good
other
sheet
way around.
I'll get here then.
You do? Yeah.
We have a jizz fairy, and the fairy makes it disappear. I'm sorry I said jizz fairy.
So did Matt. Matt had a jizz fairy.
Uh-huh.
But Matt's jizz fairy has not visited him for a while.
No, it's there. It's just
there.
Not full of sperm.
Yeah, exactly. But I have had this conversation before, and it always immediately takes me out of a movie where people are out in public somewhere.
Or in the morning, they just fully start, like, I was watching Luke Cage, and in the morning, they just start fully making out, and I was like, morning breath, guys, come on.
Morning breath.
One of you should be, like, recoiling, and the other one should be one of those weird morning breath, like, dissenters, one of those people who just doesn't care.
But they never, in a movie where you see people, like, have sex in public or a car or something, you never said
they just pull
their
skirt down.
Like,
I'm like, you are going to have a disgusting 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the cup and waddle that is so indicative of this type of an experience? It immediately takes me out.
I call it the plug.
It sounds like an artisanal sex shop. Come to the cup and waddle.
The cup and waddle.
Actually, there's
been here since the 1200s.
What is it called? There's a something in Gobble. I'm not going to remember what it is, but there's a restaurant in South Carolina near where Ricky's parents live that's the Squat and Gobble.
How do you remember
that? How do you know that?
She just bought a post office.
Oh, my God. The Squat and Gobble. I have a t-shirt that is from the Squat and Gobble. We'll talk after. That's crazy. You just inceptioned that straight out of my
essentially
mind.
Takes it back to the initial conversation about the butt-eating conversation we were having before.
I have no idea how
he gets back
here.
To his original topics on
except
podcasts.
Except for when it's butt-eating. You're laser-focused.
No, she said squat and gobble, and that...
No, I mean, you got there.
It.
It's amazing.
Well, I thought that...
It's a momentous occasion for the Nerdist podcast.
I do have to say, though, that there was... I got into a conversation, I think maybe it was with Sarah Schaefer, who's a really amazing comedian.
Yeah.
And I was talking about it the episode where, is it Yorma, right?
Yeah.
Where Yorma
first
time
plays Booth Jonathan.
He says to you, He says that thing to you.
Yes, which I think I still know by heart. The first time I fuck you, it's going to scare you a little bit because I'm a man who knows how to do things. And the reason I have that so memorized is because I did chemistry tests with actors to play Booth Jonathan.
Oh, Jesus.
And one of these actors from Queer as Folk came in, and I had such a crush on him when he was in Queer as Folk. And he came in, and I was like, what? Hi. I was 22. I was like, oh, my God, hi. I am ambivalent about your presence in this room. Sorry, Katie. I just ruined the levels of this podcast with my excitement about this. And then Yorma walked in, and the energy was just so much more interesting because I think we had met before, and he was like, I hadn't like developed this longstanding like high school crush on him in a gay relationship on a cable network show.
Right.
It was so much more. It was much more interesting, and that was exactly what Lena wanted, and so she cast him. And hearing him say that line gave it a completely different vibe than like this person that I had always pictured as Booth Jonathan. And Yorma came in and just stole it from everyone else.
But I brought that up to Sarah because I said, who would say that to a person? I can never picture myself saying that to someone.
That's because you're not that guy. And but there's guys everywhere who would say that
to
a person.
But have
you read The Game?
No, thankfully no.
You haven't?
No, why would
what?
I?
What? It's one of my – it's an unbelievable – have you read it?
I'm aware of most of the content.
Isn't that where it's like where
it's
there's nagging
book?
And
yes.
You have to like
– oh, my God. Yeah. Guys, read The Game. It looks like a Bible. It comes leather bound.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's
and with
really,
a neck beard comb.
Yes. No, it's – you have to find what you're going to peacock with. And if it's a neck beard, then that is
God
your
damn
thing.
Damn it. You know, yeah. Does it convert into a fedora?
Yeah, exactly.
As well?
No, I mean that's like – that is – something guys say. That's
But the fact that it works too, and because I said to Sarah, like if someone said that to you, that would never. And she goes, well, actually,
yeah,
it's pretty hot.
But that's
and I
the
go,
thing
what?
About that's the thing about that moment for Marnie is like he says that to her. She knows because she just got out of like a women's gender studies program, probably at Oberlin, that line should be met with like a slap across the face and like how dare you presume, blah blah blah. And then she's just so confused by it that she has to go masturbate in a restroom at her place of work.
Right.
Even though she's in a relationship and is clearly fantasizing about this one person in particular immediately after. She extricates herself from that situation successfully without cheating. But then it's helping her realize that she doesn't belong in this relationship that she's
right.
in. But so it was it's definitely a weird line, and it's so great coming from Yorma. And then he comes back later in the show, and they have this whole relationship, and they have one of the weirder sex scenes to shoot. Sorry, I'm shifting my chair. Apologies for the noise. I suddenly feel very short. Okay, here we go.
We can raise the chair. The chairs go up and down.
No, that's okay. I'm comfortable at this level
okay,
of the table.
Great.
I'm chin level with the table for those who can't see.
We can just see the top of her head. We still have not confirmed.
Luckily, I am moat with my head a lot. It's my crutch. So it was like a scene shot from above where we were in the shape of an X, and he was just directly on top of me. And if you're not close to an actor already, and their whole body is on top of yours
right.
in an X shape, you'll become really close really quickly. And I see Yorma all the time, and we just have this like bond now that is unbreakable because of the things that we've done together. It's just incredible.
Did you, just because, you know, this is the 7 years, which are obviously very important developmental years, did you feel, as you're exploring this character's sexuality and emotional, you know, and digging around all of her emotional stuff, are you learning anything about yourself, or is it, or do you feel like it's so compartmentalized and it's so fictionalized that it's not?
There's very little crossover. As I was saying, like, I'm pretty consistent. I'm kind of like, I've kind of stayed – so when I started playing Marnie, the two of us were very similar, which is convenient because it was my first job. So I knew what I was doing from theater and stuff like that in an improv group, but I hadn't ever played a character on screen really with the exception of things I did with my friends. And so it's good that I started with someone that was so close to me. And then through time, I kind of stayed on that line and Marnie just started veering away from it and then over time ended up somewhere completely different. And I think – is sort of bringing herself back, but there's some very fundamental things that are different about us, like namely our upbringing and our parents, our relationship to our parents, and our abilities to ground ourselves and to feel like when she's alone, she spirals. When I'm alone, I reserve energy. I'm technically an introvert and she's an extrovert who needs other people to use her energy with. And so she's always looking to guys to help ground her. Whereas if I need to be grounded or to feel comfortable, I just go home or I just text the family chat or whatever it is. And that's a luxury that I have. And that thus I picked a partner whose job isn't to make me feel grounded. It's just to be a partner with me. And so it's, we're just different in that way. And Marnie's just spun out trying on. She's like Pippin. She's trying all these different things. I'm so glad you guys get that reference. She's trying out all of these different things. It's not warrior against the Visigoths or whatever, but it is like, you know, she tries out being a artist girlfriend and having a plastic dress at a chic art party and realizes that's not for her. And it's always juxtaposed with a guy. She tries being like the tech startup girlfriend and performing stronger at her ex-boyfriend's office, and that surely doesn't work out. She tries all these different things, and it, you know, it takes her on this on these incredible arcs that I got to do as an actor, but it left me pretty much still where I was.
I didn't get that. You said you're an introvert, but I don't get the sense that you're introverted.
I need a lot of alone time to do my job. I spend a ton of time on my bed. I'm addicted to solitaire. I will admit it here, which is so poetic.
Computer solitaire or like actual card solitaire?
No, on my phone. I like the phone game. I listen to podcasts and play solitaire, or I watch things. I watch TV shows or whatever it is. I watch the news like 24 hours a day. I need alone time before I can go be with people.
How do you watch the news 24 hours a day?
I watch or listen. So like when I get in the car,
no, but I mean, how do you mentally process the news 24 hours a day?
Because I grew up watching it 24 hours a day.
I know, but it's depressing.
Well, it hasn't always been happy, dude. It's rarely like, honestly, today was a good one. Let's all call it in. We're just going to watch old reruns of Johnny Carson. There's no news. I mean, I've been watching the news since I was really little, and the world is fucked, and it's their job to tell us what's happening. And so it's that's a mode I'm very used to. I'm not easily made frantic by what I'm seeing on television.
Well, that's heavy, but you have days though where you're not absorbing the news because you're so busy. Or
yes,
you're just
and
out.
Those days I feel very stressed out. Like I.
But
like,
what's interesting about those? I had that yesterday. I was in Vegas with my friend Ross.
Oh, what a day to miss the news!
I didn't think about anything all day, and I just there was a moment of driving home when I did throw on NPR that I just was like, oh fuck. Boy, I just lived my life probably like 78% of the country. They don't listen to the news. They don't know what's constantly going on. So they're like, fine.
Yeah, except I think the other more interesting – the thing I think about a lot, and this is reflected in the news that I consume because I try to read news from a variety of political leanings, is what news are they consuming?
Right.
So say those same people just listen to Rush – on the way to work or whatever it is.
Not Canadian Super Trio. Rush.
Weirdly, not Rush.
Okay.
From Judd Apatow's Obsession.
The movie.
Yeah.
The bicycle movie? Wasn't that a premium
Rush movie, I think.
Yeah. Oh, Premium Rush. I apologize.
Come on, bro.
Or Rush Hour, which is very different. Rush Limbaugh. I just call him by his first name.
Absolutely.
Like, we just go way back. We're best friends. But like if that's what you're consuming and then you're going into your job and then you're coming home, making dinner and going to bed, like if that's all you're getting and it's just this, that's a very potent 30 minutes of news consumption a day and it's very specific. So I'm very interested to see what people, which perspectives on the same facts or sometimes not the same facts everyone's getting, because it's going to be impossible for any consensus to ever occur other than on like Beyonce.
When I was like 12, we went to the bookstore and my mother was like, pick out a book, we're going on vacation. And I was like, okay. And then the book I picked out was Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot by Al Franken.
Oh.
And that like informed
it had
my
idiot
entire...
on the cover.
No,
probably.
It was just I was like, oh, I like Al Franken. He used to be on SNL.
Yeah.
It's a 12-year-old. But like
he'll
that really
be funny,
he's
right?
Brilliant, by
but
the
he
way.
Is
Al
a, he's amazing.
So
I donated to his Senate campaign the first time around.
I love him.
But now to see him in these hearings and go like, oh, this, when I was 12, I was reading this book, Rush Limbaugh's.
But you know what's
yeah. Nothing has changed.
I know it just made your. But I really respect. I have a couple friends who grew up in one political context and left it. Mm. And those are the people who I respect so much. I grew up in a house where my mom and dad liked to facilitate conversations that allowed me and my brother to kind of figure out our organic beliefs on things and work towards that. And I had teachers who encouraged that too, where they'd present facts and they'd let us kind of get there,
yeah,
get to an opinion organically. And I have friends who grew up in households where they were told what to believe. They were told, you know, for an example, a couple of my friends were told that, like, feminism was only used as a pejorative term. It was only used as, like, this bra-burning, man-hating, whatever.
Yeah.
And they had to learn later that it just meant that you see no, like, difference between the way men and women should be treated. Right. And to unlearn that was a process, and then it caused this kind of rupture with their family's ideology. And those people are... that's the intelligence I respect potentially most, because it's intelligence and curiosity paired with the bravery to risk losing ties with the most fundamental ties you have, because truth matters so much to
right.
you. And whatever that truth is, and whichever way you end up deviating, that's so interesting to me that you form that belief at that age that you picked out that book. I mean, let's say you were from a different background and you picked that book because Al Franken was an SNL writer. If that belief didn't echo your parents, that still could have had that same impact. And then if you had...
believe me, my parents are very different politically than me.
Right. I think I remember that from around the election.
They live in Florida.
Yeah.
The end.
Which, I know. Now, for a couple months after the election, we always know, like, every district in Florida.
Yeah.
We can just talk about them all with such facility because of cable. But yeah, so it's it's very interesting to me, like, thinking about how to raise kids. We are not starting the kid project yet, but soon. I've always wanted to be a mom ever since I was, like, an infant, so I'm excited about it.
Graduated.
And, yeah, I am too. It would have been really hard. I'm not going to go down that path.
You were very precocious. No. You could have done
it. I was precocious. No, let's not go here.
What I'm saying is you could have just cared for an adopted child.
Oh, I thought
if you adopted as a toddler.
I thought my brother, like, he always called me his second mom that he didn't want because I was so bossy. And I thought I was in charge of him. And I would, like, mother. And then he'd go to my mom for a second opinion. She'd be like, wrong call, Allison. That was not the right.
That's
You'll
how you
get
learn.
It later, but this was not the right call. And
that's
like,
how you do. You do not lock a child in the trunk.
Yes,
you should
exactly.
not punish your brother.
You not punish brother by telling him that the back of the bathtub is warmer.
It's not.
Because he's a tiny idiot who doesn't know how to think critically yet. He turned out totally fine.
It's pretty funny. It's he's good. Fine.
He's a sportscaster. He's more than fine. He's
you know,
amazing.
What I just find is that it's so difficult now. The concept of truth is so... almost superfluous at this point.
Totally, like, because now that people say the phrase "my truth,"
yeah,
it's dead. I mean, we need a new word.
Well, also, even in just the way that information is delivered and news is delivered, it's, you know, everything is so obsessed now with traffic you know, I mean, it used to be ratings. Now it's traffic and it's clicks and it's click throughs. And so I just feel like so much of the information that we get is coming from a place of, well, we're just trying to get people's eyes. And so I really feel like that does – there is kind of like a Heisenberg principle of you destroy the experiment by looking
it.
At the experiment.
Yeah.
And so it – I feel like a lot of truth is being polluted by the need for attention.
Well, yeah. And actually, Ricky and I were always tempted to run this experiment, which would have probably ended up a Heisenberg example where we were going to create, and he did this for a TED talk he gave actually, but he just simulated it. He didn't do it in public, but basically he was going to create a bunch of Twitter accounts and tweet things against burnt toast and then use that to make an article where you compile all of them and you say there's a movement against burnt toast, mm-hmm. and then there are people coming out publicly about it, and then inevitably it would end up teetering towards race.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you create an outrage cycle off of something
sure.
completely
which would be really easy.
It would be very easy if you get the right people to kind of like take the bait.
Well, they did, you know, that happens sometimes, you know, especially if people, I don't know if it's a Facebook page or a Twitter page of people who think Onion articles are real.
Yeah, I love that.
Mm. Or there was one, this can't be real, but it was the picture of Spielberg with the Triceratops from Jurassic Park.
And, oh, the hunting.
Or was it
one.
A stegosaur? Was it a triceratops?
It was the, yeah, it was the sick triceratops.
Sick triceratops. And then and they're like, oh, I can't believe he killed. And then people were outraged. How could he do that? You know,
wait,
I
mean, with a triceratops?
With the prop. With the
yeah, so.
No, but I mean, was it. Did they think that
they
there
think
are
that
triceratops?
They thought that he had hunted a triceratops and
so
killed
there
it and was
are
posing
triceratops.
With it. Well, that, yeah.
Well, that's. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That the outrage outweighs.
Guys,
the,
wait, that's now the most urgent thing we need to deal with. We need to find the people who think there are still dinosaurs. And
well, not
live
anymore
because
Spielberg uh-huh. killed the last one.
How do you know they thought it was the last one?
I don't know that they did think it was the last one.
Can you find that and find what that
what a magical life. I lived there for a little. I love dinosaurs so much. I desperately wanted to believe they still existed for years and years and years and years.
Somewhere.
I know. That's why I still had that planted this archaeological anthropology bug and I still have it and I'm determined to go back to school for it.
You and Slash. Slash is a dinosaur guy.
Yep.
You got to talk to Slash about dinosaurs.
Happily. What's his favorite dinosaur?
I can't remember what he said his favorite dinosaur was. I can't remember what he said. His favorite
did he say Brachiosaurus? Because
he might have said Brachiosaurus.
Because if they're vocalizing, it's very interesting to me.
Well, that what because that was one of the fun things about.
Oh
watching.
My God! This caused. Oh, this is fascinating.
Yeah, here you go.
This was passed around in a very interesting order.
Yes.
I don't know why I felt like I just it had got to past come the laptop. Me. Like
here
it
go.
Went outside.
Guys, keep it moving in a circle.
Security took it briefly.
Can we just keep it moving?
Oh my God. Oh my! I'm sorry. I'm just absorbing
yeah,
this.
Wait till you get to the
disgraceful photo of recreational hunter happily posing next to a triceratops he just slaughtered. Please share so the world can name and shame this. Oh man! Wait, you guys! And then someone said that's Steven Spielberg, director of Jurassic Park. And then someone responded, "I don't care who he is. He should not have shot that." Guys, I'm laughing through my tears. This is so devastating. Oh,
this, by
my
the way,
God.
This, like, sifting through the comment threads on this will occupy... This will be a good day for you to have some of that alone time that you enjoy.
Oh, my God. No, that would end up really dark. Yeah. This is really concerning to me. It's weird enough that we might start teaching kids... weird different things not based in science about dinosaurs.
Well,
it's
that
much weirder the idea that there are people who are just so used to getting angry about
things.
Know,
but you know what it does is that it really you know, is someone who as someone who has always had a mild phobia running in a script in the background of my higher consciousness of, you know, what if I wake up one day and the reality that I see is completely distorted versus, you know, it's like...
That's totally because of the media you consume.
Any movie where someone wakes up and...
So you want a They Live scenario or...
Not They Live, but it's just like where someone is completely, you know, like a Shelter Island type of yeah. a thing where it's like, oh, your reality is actually... It turns out you're crazy as yeah. compared to the rest of the world. So what happens when I see how...
I'm shocked you didn't use a Twilight Zone example.
Well, I'm
shocked.
Impressed that you would understand that. So, yeah, any of the Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah, really,
people,
they're all about this.
They're all really kind of about that. But the idea that when you see how subjective truths can be, so you see people look at that, and in their minds, there was a Triceratops somewhere, and this man killed them, and they believe that is their truth. And how can you, because of their confirmation bias, how can you explain to them, oh, there aren't really, they might just go, yeah, because he just fucking shot.
Also, it's the most dated photo
of ever. Yeah,
look at his footwear. Like, that is a shoe.
You don't know what hunters wear.
Yeah.
Hunters don't wear a sensible sneak.
From
maybe
19,
a
from
bright white sneaker.
You just said why they do it. It's to sneak. That might be the quietest sneaker of all time.
You have to sneak up on a Triceratops.
To me, it's conditioning. It's classical conditioning because, sorry, I'm halfway through getting my sweatshirt off and I just look like I'm trying to stay modest. But let me just do this. Okay, it's classical conditioning because they're used to seeing a photo of someone next to game and getting upset about it.
It is, but what
But the game is fucking extinct, you guys.
The game is a book by Neil Strauss.
Yeah,
we already covered this.
Exactly.
What he did
was
he negged the Triceratops first.
Yeah, exactly. Lured him into his film and into being manufactured in a prop lab.
But what it does is when I take a step back and I think about how, you know, social media shows you that of all the distinct users there are operating social media, there are that number of different truths. And so it just makes me feel like how do we even I was a philosophy major, and this used to drive me crazy, and now I feel like it's reality of like, well, how do I know this table is the brown that you see? And when I start getting – and what if you're like, no, it's blue. When I start taking a step back from that, it really does start to twist my brain a little bit about what is reality and what do we understand as a commonly accepted reality and what's even true anymore and how do I know if anything I believe is real?
How long are the stretches of time you go where you just accept it and don't think about it?
Well, most of the time I'm just too fucking busy to really.
Isn't that so nice?
It's great.
How often do you think about death?
You know, it comes up, but it
does. It comes up every time anyone mentions parents, unfortunately.
I know.
I feel like it comes up all the time.
Oh,
it's like some weird fate from like a Greek myth where you're fated to just have to repeat this fact.
Oh, no, I know. I always feel bad. I always feel bad that people listen to the podcast like, we get it. Your dad's dead. But
no, it's nice. It's good to head it off before someone goes down this. Well, you know this because of your relationship with your dad,
sure,
who's currently alive. Like, it'd be very weird if someone made a point that rested on you still having a dad that was alive and then got
right
to the end of that point and you were like, well, I'm
actually
sorry to
he's not
know but you, but he's not.
Yeah, there's improv training right there.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you'd have to pretend to yes and that. You'd have to pretend he was still alive and then your whole audience.
Oh, he's like, a great.
Everyone's like, he's lost it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Yeah, exactly. Did you just say his dad was?
It's trying to yes and, man.
But so in terms of thinking of death, I do think about it. And the crazy thing is that it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm not afraid of the actual dying process. It doesn't bother me to the concept of being dead. I don't believe there's anything that happens after that, and I'm totally fine with that. What I fear is dread. I fear the dread
or
that
like
precedes
the
death. Pain, long,
yeah,
you know. What about you?
Ricky described something to me that I later heard. Oh, God. I want to say it was Dana Carvey on Pete's podcast used the same theory, which is like Ricky said, I don't remember what happened to me before I was born.
Yeah.
So I'm not scared to be dead.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. And that's how I feel too. He articulated – because the thing that was always scariest to me about death was that I couldn't imagine what it was going to feel like.
Sure.
I have a lot of anticipatory anxiety. So I used to like have a lot of anxiety before going to something if I couldn't picture it, which is part of what's so comfortable about doing press for 6 years is that these are all becoming really comfortable spaces that
mm-hmm.
are – I would be nervous normally, but like walking into Fallon or Seth Meyers' show is – like a space I've been in before, so I don't have to be nervous about coming to a new place, interacting with new people. Like, it's the same segment produced. That's just a very specific example to articulate this point.
Right.
Very unrelatable and specific example.
No, everyone's on Fallon and Seth.
Yeah, you guys know when you go to Fallon. So it's like a...
Welcome to the Goop podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But so I was like, I know, God. When I want to look up something very fancy to like spoil myself, that's where I go, which I think is the use case of the Goop model.
Yeah.
It's like it's how we spoil ourselves.
It's just how we spoil ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're having a problem, just have one of your assistants.
Yeah, just look up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just the one though. You don't need two on
nope,
that.
Not
you need
both
someone
of them this
with
time.
You still.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the anxiety about not knowing what it was going to feel like is what kept me up when I was young. But now I'm okay not knowing what it feels like because I can at very least liken it to another time where I also didn't know what something felt like.
Sure. Yeah. I assume it's just the absence of feeling.
Yeah.
But
it's very hard to picture that. Like, I'm sure my parents tried to describe that at some point when I was ready for that description. And I just couldn't, because I even sitting here, I can't. It's outside of the realm of what I can.
Yeah, because through any type of associative learning, what do you connect
yeah,
that
exactly.
to? What do you? I mean, I guess you can connect it to sleep.
Yeah, but
even
sleep, we have our subconscious is very.
There's
busy,
something
at least
still
mine
running around.
Mine works very hard.
What are your dreams like?
I don't remember them typically, but I talk a lot. Back to my youth,
mm-hmm.
I'm full of chatter. None of it is, you know, intelligible. But I just. You know, I'm chatting and figuring things out. And
has Ricky ever said, you said the craziest thing last night?
No, because it's not English, really.
Oh, gotcha.
But it's just a lot of kind of murmuring and working it out. And
just sorting through it.
I also just, my teeth are just clenched. like, my anxiety is that deep that even in my sleep, sleep has always been very superfluous to my life. Sorry, I just had a complete inability to pronounce that very specific word.
What is your anxiety based on?
Anticipatory stuff, and then also just like whatever is happening in my brain just gives me. Also, evolutionarily, I'm so lucky. I don't have a lot of natural stressors in my environment. I don't mm-hmm. have my life isn't at immediate risk in a way that I can constantly detect. I'm lucky I can, everything is okay. So all of the survival instincts that I have from when way back, I don't, I'm not needing all of them. So my body just creates this need to experience anxiety so that there's nothing to do with it. I'm not in danger often. I'm not being predated. I'm not, you know, whatever
it is. You're not being hunted by Steven Spielberg
exactly.
with a Triceratops rifle.
God, how dare he?
How dare
I'm
he?
I'm outraged. I'm offended.
Specific rifle.
Yeah.
It's a Triceratops
very
rifle.
Specific
it's got
rifle.
Three it's barrels.
It's a grenade. It would have to be. I think that's where it comes from, like chemically. That's the root of it.
I understand. Yeah, Lydia says it to me sometimes. It seems like you need to create stresses so that you can have them.
Yeah, I'm not doing
like,
it.
How dare
I'm
you
not
make
doing
a
it.
Solid point?
I'm not doing it with any kind of awareness.
She's onto something there.
Yeah,
you.
I know. She's smarter
smart.
Than I am. That's
well,
what she's onto.
We get that. We all know that.
Yeah,
she understands.
I mean, but I think that's probably, I mean, it's not bad. It's just uncomfortable at times. And when you're busy, it's hard to just kind of deal with a little bit because it can just kind of derail you a little bit. But at night, even when I was little, I didn't sleep a lot. I was talking. I was too busy just lecturing.
Conducting interviews.
Sleep. Yeah. So even when I was little, I slept like not many hours a night. I can't say with any authority. I'm sure it was something like 7, which for an infant is nothing. Mm-hmm. But I was just awake, observing, talking the rest of the time. So I just didn't – it felt like a waste of time. And to this day, I sleep like 5 hours a night.
Me too.
I know.
Yeah, okay.
I know that about you because
both
I know
so
more
happy
about you.
It.
I know.
Me too.
Well, it's just nice
how
to hear
much?
That someone else can function that way.
I know. It's just – I've always been that way. In high school, I'd sleep like 3 hours a night, and that was pushing it. But that was because there's literally I did not have
and
the hours. In
where
the
did
day
you get
that
on the back end or the front end? Did you go to bed late or wake up very early?
Both, because I would wake up at like 5, drive to school. I had a little commute for high school. Get to school, go to acapella practice because I was cool.
Of course, why not?
Of course.
What was your number one acapella jam?
We loved like you know what? We sang Bohemian Rhapsody and it was a real challenge, but it was pretty fucking great when
nice.
We got it right. And then I'd have school. Mm-hmm. And then after school, I'd have soccer practice. And then after soccer, I'd have rehearsal for plays. And then I'd have my commute back home and then dinner and then homework would start. Mm. So I was burning the candle on both ends. And there were a couple of times where my mom kept me home from school because she was like, it's not safe for you to go to school today. You have had cumulatively like only a couple hours of sleep this week and you can't go to school. You're on a highway. Like, you can't go. And I remember at a certain point, I started doing my homework in a part of the house that was a little further away from where my parents were asleep, like in this living room area, so that my mom didn't have such a good sense of how little I was sleeping so that I could get away with it.
Wow.
But that, again, I was kind of okay. I mean, I always wondered, like, what would I be like if I got 8 hours of sleep? But the answer is it's a choice between efficiency and the ability to accomplish things. And that like Hamiltonian energy of like just needing to just keep working because it's never enough time.
The last time I slept a full 8 hours was 2 years ago at Comic-Con. It was the end.
That's a weird time to sleep.
Yeah.
8 hours.
Well, it was the night after our last. Like I was done the next day.
Oh yeah.
I just did this at the Sun Valley Film Festival. I was there getting an award, and the next day I slept 8 hours for the first time
and
in a really
when you woke
long
up,
time.
Did you go? Is this how I'm supposed to feel all the time?
Yes.
Because it felt really good.
It felt great. It felt so good. It felt so good.
Like, this is how people are supposed to feel all the time. That's amazing.
I know. But I also, like, I love my time. I have, like, a total routine before bed, and I follow all the rules you're supposed to follow. I love reading before bed.
Yeah.
I love reading. And so that's when I read. I don't read a lot during the day. I read article, other things, but a book at night. I love that.
Yeah. I'm getting the spider sense from over here that you might have to leave in a second.
Oh, I'm so
sorry.
Is that
what's happening? Okay. I don't want to.
Do you have somewhere to go?
No, not for a little while.
Yeah,
I mean, at midnight, we're doing at midnight, but not for a while. And
it's only 1 o'clock, Chris.
So it's
who shows up at midnight?
Who is this character, Matt?
It's the guy who thinks time is real.
Oh, okay. Time is not real.
Whatever time I see
time
something
is
when it's happening.
It's a construct of the simulation that
we're both
in.
Banking on that because we treat time very weirdly with no respect whatsoever.
At all. But you know what?
You and my husband are totally not the age you say you are.
What?
Both of you have this in common.
What is it?
That I don't believe that Ricky is 36 and you are however old you are. He still gets carted.
I'm 45.
He still gets carted, and I bet you do too.
Matt, your eyes got big. You've known me a long time. You know how old I am.
I don't believe you.
It's
like,
true.
Did you need the gravitas when you were just getting started and you reversed?
Chris, I met you when you were 35.
Yeah.
Is that true?
That's crazy.
I know, Matt.
Yeah, Matt, we lost Matt.
You don't
Matt
look
there
a day
a
over 36.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No, but it's really interesting to me because like we're 7 or 8 years apart depending on what time of year it is. And a lot of people when we were first getting married, my grandparents have the same age difference and my grandfather has dementia.
My wife and I have
dementia.
The same age difference.
You do.
Yep.
My grandfather has dementia, and watching it on this end is fascinating because it's really hard and it's awful. And he suddenly seems so much older than she does, whereas for my whole life they seemed like they were the exact same age. And she's
and now she's in the position of having to caretake.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Of course.
And it's very different. And when we were getting married, I remember talking to my grandmother about it, and she was like, the age difference doesn't matter until you get to this stage, and then it really every year, every day feels like it's weighted down with something. And I kept saying to her, there's something about Ricky that feels like he took a shot of youth serum at some point, and it's not going to apply to him in the same way. He may outlive me by like a couple decades because he'll just be on his computer and he won't realize that time has gone on.
That's why my wife is older than me.
Oh, cool.
That's
move.
The way I went. I was like, well,
cool
let's
move.
Figure out life expectancy
that.
And then good. We'll die at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
How romantic.
See, I'm going to have a whole thing.
Honey,
act.
We're going to die at the same time.
I told Ricky, I was like, I'm going to have this third act that is just fabulous. If you aren't the youth serum drinker, I think you are. I'm going to have like a whole adventure. I'll find love in a nursing home.
You'll get sleep.
Perfect. I'll get sleep.
I don't know. I think it probably... You know,
do you sleep yet less, you think?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll definitely
Yeah,
because
there's
less.
One presence in your bed for decades. And
right.
Then, you know, not to be so morbid, but that's a very hard thing for me to imagine.
Well, typically...
We both travel so much that, frankly, it's not weird for me to imagine
the only,
right now.
I mean, the only time I think about death is when I look at my dog.
Oh, because you just know.
I know.
I thought about it the
my
second
dog's like
I adopted
three.
Her.
My dog's like three or
Mine's
four.
Two.
I don't know. Again, adopted.
And you know
yes.
that.
But like,
know.
I hold, he's 75 pounds. And I
She's
pick
65.
Him up, I pick him up and I go, you're going
to
die.
You don't need to brag about how strong you are, dude. We get it.
After I curl
my dog, I do 14 reps of 20 per. It's,
whoa.
It's,
I don't even understand that math.
It isn't this really a thing anyone does.
Must be CrossFit lingo. You're a CrossFit guy, right?
No, my trainer won't allow CrossFit.
Oh, I know about your trainer. Again, you don't need to brag. We get it. You're very rich.
Listen, Chris monopolizes his time. He's richer than I am. So I look at my dog all the time and I tell him he's going to die.
Why?
And he doesn't understand the words, but I just need to get it out.
Why?
I don't know. I get so sad about my dog. I love my dog. Like it's my, the, but I said the saddest thing in the world to me is when I'm at the dog park in Silver Lake, and my dog wanders off, and then he loses me, but I can see him.
Oh,
his like face of like panic, looking around trying to find me, and then when he sees me and he like starts bounding at me with a huge grin, it's like
as
so
opposed
sad.
To get making eye contact, and then he kind of like shields and like oh well,
yeah, he's like Dad, stop, Dad, go away,
drop me off at the curb. The
you're embarrassing
see
me.
You.
You're
his
embarrassing
dad
me.
Has a whole syllable at the end. Dad,
Dad, stop it,
Mama.
God,
there's a few things I just totally dread more than that phase of parenting where
right?
the syllable comes in and you're just like I suck for 6 years
yeah.
to this person.
I think it could be it, and I feel like. That gap is growing now, so it could be anywhere from like 9 to 20.
So you know, true. I got lucky because my parents are legit cool and know more about pop culture than I do, which is very rare. They're not parents at all. They're not
yeah,
like parenting parents.
I hope
parents.
To never – I hope to like stay in touch, but I don't think I can.
This generation of parents will be much more, although if you already don't know what Musical.ly is, you're behind.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm already
I had to, yeah, I had to learn
.ly.
What that was. Yeah, exactly. That's how it starts, yeah. dude.
Right? That L-Y? What's happening?
Yeah.
And you welcome it because it's you get very comfortable in the music that you like. And
yeah.
there's at a certain point, you're like, no more. No
yeah.
more room.
But I remember when Ricky met my parents, like the first conversation we had as a foursome was like about, you know, a Gawker article and then like this person and then this thing that was happening, and Ricky was like, oh my god, this is so crazy that I'm meeting the parents, but I'm talking about exactly what I would be talking about if I was at dinner with my friends.
Nice.
Yeah,
That's really nice.
Which is really cool.
And that's very helpful.
He was super psyched because it made it a lot less nerve-wracking. He was like, oh, I don't need like parent lingo.
Where'd you go on your honeymoon? Did you take a honeymoon?
We went to Italy because no one's ever gone there on a honeymoon. And we just
I wasn't even sure that was an option.
Yeah, weirdly, we kind of trailblazed it and we went to Italy on a honeymoon.
Maybe more people will start doing that now.
Listen, I recommend it. I mean, I know it's controversial. I promise the food is good.
Yes.
It's really pretty. just losing it. Crying and laughing.
Mi piace l'Italia.
Oh, no. I speak French, which is applicable in like three places.
Désolé. Je ne sais pas pour français.
I'll be there next week.
What?
Oh, yeah, he's going to Paris. He's taking his lady
France?
To Paris.
Oui.
Is it in honor of Beauty and the Beast?
It is. We really just wanted to get as close as we could to...
To a provincial town.
Did you think some local baguettes would increase your sperm?
Marie, the baguettes. I'm telling you, if you want to start the movie now, we can start. You can hit play, and I will do the movie for you.
Was Jerry Orbach in this Beauty and the Beast?
Or
was
I don't know.
No, he's dead, so he couldn't be.
His ghost could have been.
His ghost could have been.
You never know. They could have been like, we don't know when you're going to go, man. We're going to need to record this now.
You know, if Jerry Orbach was cool, he would have haunted a candelabra after he died.
Jerry Orbach is cool and probably is haunting a candelabra right now.
You think so?
Is there one in this room?
No, but I do have a Lumiere candelabra from Disneyland in my house.
That's one of the things, by living in New York, I feel like I'm
normally that's a conversation stopper. Thank you.
I know. I'm in this whole like Disney World, like it wasn't. There was more Disney World coming. I'm so sorry.
Please.
I feel like I'm missing out on this whole social hierarchy of ways to go to Disney World. Like I'm just hearing about these guys.
Well, Disneyland is where you want to go.
The restaurant. Is that where you want to go?
It is, Matthew.
I've been to Disney World when I was little.
To us, because we're here.
But Disneyland is the original. Like Disney World is...
I'm going to Disneyland Paris next week.
Oh.
Well.
May we.
My wife begrudgingly.
Mais pourquoi?
Listen, they have different rides.
Do you like rides? Yes.
I like rides. I also am like, I just want to see it. Like, it's something since, you know,
I've
built
never
in 91,
been,
okay. 92.
I'm such a Disney fan, and I've never been to Disneyland. I've been to Disney World.
I've never been to Disneyland.
Promise?
What's the rest of your day like? Let's go. I have a yearly pass.
I have Corden. Do you think that'll work timing-wise?
James would love to go. Do you want to go sing at Disneyland?
We can go to the restaurant.
They're open till midnight.
You could do Cars pool karaoke. You could do karaoke on the Cars ride.
Cars
Hello,
Disney Pixar.
God,
works.
If he was on ABC.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you something because I
I got
the
Katie
signal.
That
you do have to go, but I do.
We should talk about Get Out.
We did. Well, Get Out.
We did.
You should go see it if you haven't seen it.
As you know, as an avid listener, we do the plugs at the top.
I know that's true. Except he's so positive about everything. I want to really milk his actual love
his
for
actual
this
love
movie.
It'll come across.
It's real.
You'll hear it.
Jordan even told me after doing your, because he did your podcast on his birthday, right?
Yeah,
that was the day of our premiere.
Yeah, that was the day of your premiere. He was going to the premiere that night.
Yeah, so we talked about it that night, and he said you really liked it. So
I loved
I'm here
it.
To receive that information.
I loved it. He got to come to my house, and we did the podcast like right where I watched the movie.
Oh, you didn't watch it in the theater?
You should see it in the theater.
In all
of your free time. There's a lot of cheering that
I know
happens.
You don't have time.
But I would love to.
The theater experience is really fun, and it's still sold out all the weekend, so you can still have the experience to go to a sold out weekend screening with people.
I was so happy when I watched it and saw how people were responding to it online and because it's, you know, it's always my favorite thing to see people. I don't know, this is a narcissistic way to say this, but it enriches my life to know that I knew that guy was already talented, and now everyone's going to know that guy's
talented.
Isn't
it also interesting to know what was in his brain for all of this time? Like, he just had been thinking about this idea for 5 years, and the patience to not jump the gun and make it before he was ready to make it, or to bring it into the world before it was time for in his life or in the life of the pop culture, you know, consciousness. I mean, we had this conversation. We were both saying we've been picky up until now, and the dumb thing to do now, the easy rookie mistake to make, would be to stop being picky now and just take whatever juicy, sexy thing comes next. And we both were like giving each other pep talks to like stay picky, stay. Because we're both very protective. We love what we do. We don't want to corrupt it with something that bums us out and we have to go promote and hate anyway.
But I think there are ways to make things, you know, to bring a point of view to something that wouldn't otherwise have that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, and that's been happening a little bit with Galaxies, and I'm so Daniel's in Black Panther, and he's been in Atlanta shooting, and I'm so excited for that.
That's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome. And so that's happening, and then the sense of humor and the self-awareness of that these movies are taking on now is definitely fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I still think the female characters leave a lot to be desired.
In the fact that they don't really exist?
Yeah, in the fact that they don't exist without being in reference to male characters. Crazy. They are not standalone people. And so until that happens, I find it really hard to imagine.
We have to go because this opens up a whole other... I would love to talk about that, especially because I've been watching Feud, Betty and Joan.
Oh, yes, which I haven't started
yet. It is one of the most spectacular television things
I've ever seen. I can't wait. I'm going to put a boa on and just
and
sit
a lot
back
of it,
and watch
a lot of it. A lot of it deals with that and how... you know, just these iconic women still were having to navigate being manipulated by the men who were in control of the systems at the time, and it's so beautifully acted and well done.
And that's where I'm so lucky is that because of Girls, I got to wait until a character like Rose came along, and that isn't an option that everyone has. But because I was on a show, I had steady work, so I didn't have to take anything. And then I read the script and I met Rose and I was like, oh, that is who I've been waiting for. That's the person that I need to play. And so I'll just wait till the next one comes along, and if she doesn't, I'll do it myself. So it's the same attitude that Jordan had before Get Out, and we were both just trying to do our best to bring ourselves back down to earth and to restore to our factory settings so that we wouldn't become in some way corrupted by what all that was buzzing around us. You know?
Sure.
That's the goal, at least. So, but if I pull up in like a Lamborghini and stuff, just be like, she lost the plot.
In a leather zip-up bodysuit. Yeah.
Wait, she lives in New York. How did she even drive that here?
Yeah. It's this new Concorde Lamborghini.
I don't know why. When you said Lamborghini and I said leather zip-up bodysuit, it was because the first thing I thought of was Cannonball Run.
Oh, which there's is a nothing movie, wrong sure with that. Seen.
I've heard of it. That's but, something.
Jackie Chan.
Yes, but there were two of the drivers were two women in a Lamborghini who wore like these leather zip up bodysuits, and they were two of the characters.
Again, probably a movie made for male pleasure because that sounds so uncomfortable.
It does not sound good.
They distract
at all.
The other racers that is unzipping their leather bodysuits.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. That's a great role for us to perform as women. That sounds so uncomfortable.
It was the 70s.
Leather bodysuit.
Yeah, it was not good.
From leather.
I didn't know. From when is that going to leave our lexicon? I don't know from you.
I don't know from leather.
I don't know from leather.
I don't know. I've known him from.
I know that's the other one. I've known him from Seven. I'm like, what is that sentence? That's not a.
Let's talk about Brad Pitt. He was in the movie Seven.
Let's talk about Brad Pitt. Controversially, I think he's handsome and a good actor. I know that's really crazy.
So Get Out, the final season of Girls.
Yes.
And then anything else? Anything else that you want
to? Horizons is an organization I'm involved with. I won't describe it here. But it's for education things in the U.S. and everything. Very quickly, if you look at the ills of our country, no matter what your leanings, it deals with the fact that we're not properly educating all of our students. So look at Horizons. Go to horizonsnational.org. And then, if you don't think people should contract AIDS, Red is a really good organization to back as
you
well.
Got the watch and the iPhone came out today, I believe.
I think that is news.
No, it's on Apple's website.
I'm doing a
it's
day.
On Apple's website.
Okay, I'm doing a day of press about it on Thursday.
Great. As April 4th, this aired. Guys, check out her day.
Of Red, yeah. And so we need to keep in mind that there are people struggling to stay alive that don't have to because of ARVs. So that's the work that Red does. And those are the two things that I spend most of my extra time on. And other than that, my TBD podcast of just me talking.
We got to come back because I feel like...
We will come back.
I mean, I honestly...
I'll do an Allison Williams Returns and it'll be a delight.
There's so many...
She knows the naming fucking
of course
tropes.
I do.
It's amazing.
Of course I do. I'm ready. This was just my warm-up.
I'm honored. I am impressed. And I'm thoroughly
I'm a fan.
Delighted. Thank you so much.
It's so good to see you.
And I am so... I'm so happy for Get Out, and I'm so happy to see whatever else you do next. And it's exciting.
You.
As sad as it is, it's a very transitional period, and you will have needed to you have to end this to start the next wonderful thing that you're going to do.
Exactly. And, so we'll see if I completely lose my mind or not.
You will not completely
we'll
lose
see
your
it
mind.
Together.
You're going to keep it all together.
All right.
With colored pens and
yes,
keeping
exactly.
lists.
Yes, exactly. Should we say it at the same time?
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Should count to three? Do you want to count to three?
Sure. One,
wait,
two, three.
Are we saying it on three or after? Well, we can.
After
one,
three.
One, two, three. Beat. One, two, three, and then. So it's
gotcha.
Really four.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Enjoy your burrito.
We did it.
Woo!
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast brought to you by Fusion TV's The AV Club. The AV Club, based on the website, The AV Club, is now going to be a TV show, The AV Club, hosted by John Tetti. It is a weekly deep dive that illuminates all the fun, strange corners of pop culture. The AV Club airs Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fusion TV.
Every year, 50 teenage girls, one from every state, show up in Mobile, Alabama to compete in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. They spend months training to win the big prize. But what happens when a Supreme Court decision leaves many of them feeling unprepared for the real world?
A lot of the girls were crying, and I never seen any of them cry before.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shima Oliai. Follow me behind the scenes as all 50 girls are catapulted into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. What do they think of their changing country? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.